Ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your NFT virtual hats because we've got a disruptor in the house. Today on the Ad Attach Show, we're graced by none other than Fred Godfrey, the brains behind Origin, where they're rewriting the rules of connected TV advertising faster than you can say binge watch. Get ready for some serious insights, laughs, and maybe a few digital explosions along the way. Let's dive into the chaos and know more than you did yesterday.
Welcome to the Ad Attach Show, where marketing, media, and ad tech merge. Stay tuned as your host, Pesach Latin, navigates you through the evolving landscape of marketing trends and advertising innovations.
Welcome to the Ad Attach Show. I am your host, Pesach Latin. Today we've got none other than Fred Godfrey, the trailblazing mind behind Origin. Let's get into the nitty-gritty of how his strategies are setting new benchmarks for captivating audiences in the digital age. All right, Fred, let's dive into the whirlwind that is your world at Origin. First up, spill the tea. How's life treating you, really?
Well, besides, first off, I'm already super happy to be here and grateful. And with that out the way, how is life treating me in general? I think I'm not known for lying. Up and down, let's just say. You know, it's up when things are great and down when you got to push the mud uphill. But on balance, I would say I'm alive and I'm pretty grateful for it.
You know, keeping the English, keep calm and carry on.
Yes. Keep calm, carry on. Keep calm, stay breathing, whatever it is.
So we all have something that occupies our mind. What's been on your mind lately? Any thoughts, revelations, wild epiphanies, anything you want to share before we get going?
Yes, quite a recent one. Why was I not shortlisted in the Sony World Photography Competitions, and what can I do to be better? I would say that was a thought starter for me. Otherwise, nothing.
That's your hobby, right? That's your hobby, not your
my job.
Profession.
No.
Wildlife photographer. What do you like taking pictures mainly of?
Well, this is the problem. I sort of cross the spectrum a lot. I do a lot of street, being here in New York. I do a lot of wildlife, macro photography. Actually, it's amazing because as a landscape photographer, you look very much at these gigantic sceneries and compositions, but you forget to look inwards at what you're trampling on. And so I find macro photography absolutely fascinating, all of it really, which is kind of problematic. So I have to carry 40 pounds of camera gear with me wherever I go.
TV's gone from the new kid on the block to everyone's favorite hangout spot, with viewership spikes making the network executives drool. Reflecting on CTV's whirlwind romance, how is Origin riding this wave without wiping out?
Well, for us, it's growth in viewership is nothing but fuel and opportunity for us. So that side of things doesn't really wash us out, as long as we stay on top of that growth and what it means for us and the brands that we represent. Where I think there is an area that we need to and do focus on, it's as now connected TV is, as you said, this new kid on the block, this shiny kid on the block, you know, which 5 years ago when we entered into this world as Origin, not a lot of agencies were taking that seriously. Now they are, which means that we are more a minnow in a whale pond than in a shark pond. So we need to make sure that we stay on top of it. We keep our thought leadership on point. And of course, the products that we build and creatives and campaigns we deliver as good as they can possibly be, and certainly better than what other people can do.
So when was there a point you had this aha moment that it was going to blow up bigger than an Elon Musk tweet?
Well, that actually came quite a long time ago, back when I was at Newsy with my boss and our business partner, Stephen Strong. I had just come off stage.
And that's your CEO, right?
COO, yes. Co-founder, yes. COO. One of us is Pinky, one of us is the brain.
And, who is it?
Well, I think most people who know us know, but he is the brain. Let's just leave it at that. I'm just the annoying little one that runs around making noises whenever I choose. But it was. I'd just come off stage for probably the fifth time in 12 months back in 2020. early 2015, talking about desktop video. And as I was on my way back to Atlanta Airport at the time, Stephen called me up to talk about this idea he had for pivoting Newsy in its entirety to connected TV. And that was the aha moment, realizing how frankly, sort of how depressed I felt coming off stage and seeing how we could sort of continue to squeeze those lemons when I saw this green field and what we saw as being the future of TV.
How are you feeling with the huge viewer surge in CTV the last few years? Is it all hands deck at your company, or are you guys cool as a cucumber?
Well, I mean, again, like, it's great. The viewer surge is nothing but upside for us. We work, you know, we have our own portfolio of media partners who we do all of our buying from. You know, it's very important to us that everything in that regard is very much one-to-one for our clients. So the bigger the viewership goes, the larger our reach really becomes, even if we're not necessarily working with more, you know, content owners, which just helps us find the right people. You know, so all hands on deck in that regard, but specifically all hands on deck when it comes to understanding and appreciating this growth and what more we need to do to make sure that we're finding the right people for our clients.
EdTech seems to be evolving, especially in CTV, faster than fashion trends. How do you keep your ads from looking like last season?
I'm making sure they don't.
I noticed that you guys are... You're specialized in ads that don't feel like ads. That's what my notes say.
Yes, and that's probably about the right way of putting it. I might actually pass that one on to the sales team. At the end of the day, we're a creative technology company. And as some of the earlier people to coin ourselves as such, what we believed on day one going into Origin was that the 75-year-old rulebook of here's your ad, now play it to the world until it becomes stale, was fine for traditional and linear broadcast purposes where that was the best you could do. But in a world where TV or TV2, however you want to call it, some people still call it connected TV, you know, is now the predominant form of entertainment in the living room, along with that, you know, comes a lot of technology that allows you to be so much more agile, so much more nimble in the creative itself. And so the job that we do for our clients is we build creatives that are deployed into living rooms onto connected TV that are as agile as the ads they might run on social.
So how do you make them part of the story rather than annoying interruptions? I notice you have it's native smart TV advertising, you call it?
Yeah, so that was actually the first product that we launched in 2019. It's called Slingshot. And it was designed to benefit brands that already have a creative, be it a 15 or a 30, but want their ads to be noticed, seen and noticed, which in the world of distraction, disruption, and ADD is difficult when everybody can turn to their phone. And so the purpose and the design of Slingshot is that it injects 15 seconds, up to 15 seconds of incredibly attention-grabbing, short-form native content into the ad break as a piece of content, but it's designed to then wrap around or run just before a brand ad. So now when your viewer is sitting down at the end of the day, exhausted, gin and tonic in one hand, bowl of crisps in the other, and they're watching their ad-supported TV and they go into one of these ad breaks, which we think is fundamentally broken anyway, instead of now just tuning out because they know they're going to get 1, 2, 3, 4 ads back to back, they may be on their phone, but they'll suddenly get either a sight, a sound, or a form of color that will get them looking back up. And then through the nature of the content we produced, get them obsessed and maybe even co-viewing, co-talking about what they're seeing. And then that'll lead them into the ad in the right mental or emotional frame of mind. So it's content within ad breaks, within content, fundamentally, but very carefully crafted.
How are you teaching agencies to move beyond the ad break?
It starts, I think, with the Slingshot product. Honestly, like, it's showing them that, you know, the status quo is all well and good until it's not. And that, do you really want your ad to, you know, to run before and after other ads that aren't being watched, when you could actually build your own tiny little miniature content environment and nestle your creative within it? I think that's the beginning of a longer term vision that we have, whereby the ad break itself will be fundamentally disrupted, where there will be a far more sort of homogenous bleeding I think if that's even the right word, between the movie or the show that's being enjoyed, but also the brand's existence, shall we say, on the same screen.
Yeah, I noticed in my notes, I pointed that your ads, viewers can engage with these ads in real time and dive deeper into the products or services offered through interactive layers that goes beyond the traditional passive viewing experiences. How do you guys, what is the key to that? What is the main key?
The main key is maybe not one that you would expect, and that is that that engagement, that interaction cannot and must not happen on the TV through the remote. It's not that form of interaction. We believe that that fundamentally rides against what the lean back nature of living room TV is. But instead, what we've learned to do over the years and conducted so many studies, you wouldn't believe it, is learn how to get people engaged on this while right. They're sitting down watching TV.
What was the commercial? It was just the QR code recently on the Super Bowl. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was just the QR code going around. Did you do anything?
The previous year, that was for Coinbase, and it broke.
Oh, yeah, I remember Coinbase.
And that was good. But QRs are brilliant. In fact, we commissioned a nationwide survey last year where we asked 7,000 households, streaming households, what they think about QRs when they see them on TV. And are they put off? Are they excited? And what would actually lead them into wanting to turn on their camera and do something? That's how much we believe in their potential. But fundamentally, the rules around QR or any other form of getting someone to engage on their phone is it's just a portal. It's just a quicker and easier way to get them to where you want them on their phone, which is a very important part of the discipline.
So everyone's talking about market fragmentation. It's the wild party. Everyone's invited, but as you know, it's too crowded. Can't get in. There's all these bouncers. Yes. As CTV growth spurts has put us in the awkward teen years, what hurdles are making you sweat? And how is Origin planning to ace this phase without any social faux pas?
That's a good question and a very complicated one. In fact, I really mean it's complicated. Like, how can we break that up into a first part and a second part? And if so, I'd love for you to ask it again.
But what hurdles are you facing right now in what we would call the teen years of CTV?
The education piece for a lot of the legacy holding companies and agencies who are still relevant enough to refuse to accept that this is the new TV. And until they do, these teenage growth spurts are going to be very stilted. You know, the truth is that there is a lot more supply than demand right now on connected TV. And that is causing a unintentional slowdown in the growth and the adoption of innovative techniques, I think, to get it out there. So I would say that's probably the one big hurdle. But this is beginning, that balance is starting to tip. A lot of budgets that were formerly innovation budgets are now more mainstream. And on top of that, I think what will help push connected TV out of adolescence through puberty and into adulthood is going to be the culminating moments that we are in the middle of now, which is agencies and their brands looking for a lot more than just awareness through TV, but actually performance outcomes, however they may choose to define them.
Well, how do you guys do targeting without getting too creepy?
Well, I mean, that's I'd love to say that's not my department, but I think every department's kind of my department. We believe actually in telling our clients not to over-target. I was talking to a very good friend of mine who used to be at UM about this in his office the other day, and it was so fascinating. While we totally believe in targeting, you know, like we do, because we are so agile in our creatives, we believe in very geo-specific creatives or demo-specific creatives. We don't think that targeting should actually be over-egged. It's very expensive. It really does take a big chomp out of somebody's budget. But also, you can over-target. You know, if you imagine that you're a stroller company, you know, you would think logically, well, we need to go after people who are thinking about having children who are exactly this age, exactly in this income bracket. And those are the people we should sell our, you know, $1,000 brands to. But what about granny who lives, you know, 18 blocks away looking for a baby shower present? So in that regards, we are quite careful and as respectful as we can and should be, obviously, about people's privacy, which on connected TV is a different matter and far less invasive.
How are you guys dealing with ad fraud?
That's one of the reasons why we work directly with each of our content partners, because right. we know exactly what we are buying. When we buy a spot, we know and we can control that, and we can pass that level of trust onto our clients. That's why we don't buy through networks or exchanges or anything like that, because ad fraud in connected TV is a lot easier than people might think, and that's incredibly terrifying.
I think interactive ads are probably the future. They're popping up like unexpected plot twists, aiming to keep viewers on their toes. As advertisers gear up for the Wild West of CTV, what survival skills are must-haves to not only stay in the saddle, but to have monumentous change?
Must-haves by people at our end, the creative and delivery end?
Advertisers.
Advertisers?
But what should advertisers know about CTV?
They should know that they shouldn't be scared, honestly. They should understand that it is still TV. But in order not to be scared, I think the first thing they need to have is better knowledge and acceptance of truly what humans are like at home and how they truly behave at home. And once they have that, not be frightened to push the boundaries and understand how are we going to engage them? How are we actually going to tell a story? Because that's one thing, again, which I think we've been forgetting a little bit as advertisers, which is our job is to be storytellers. Our job is to help someone imagine being somewhere or wearing something or owning something. And that just doesn't come because you beat them over the head over and over again until they buy something. You've got to make them want it. You've got to make it their idea. And so I'd say, again, don't be frightened of that. Don't be frightened to go back to the roots of what a creative is about, and let the product do the talking.
Do you think that the quest for endless data has somehow destroyed the storytelling process?
I think there are other things that have risked destroying the creative storytelling process. And it's an expression which I'm stealing, and I can't remember who I'm stealing it from, but that is that advertising today, especially connected TV advertising, has become more about the plumbing and less about the poetry. You know, the success today is about efficiency of delivery, or we got our frequency down, or we did this, or we did that. That's not what makes advertising successful or not. That just what right. makes it good or bad. So I think that, you know, we've got a little bit of sort of walking back to do to get back to our roots. And then I think we'll be in a position where if you have the right attitude and the right mentality towards telling a story, coupled with the technology that underpins this new TV, the opportunities and the potential is limitless. And that's what we do here. We build ad formats that simply don't exist. We believe in saying, because it's not done, let's do it. And that's why we're here 5 years on as a small business and still maybe a minnow, but a minnow that hasn't been eaten by every whale in the world.
What's your mantra for keeping ad frequency from turning into that one party guest who won't leave?
The mantra for, I mean, just don't do it. I don't know. I mean, frequency is very easy to control if that's the type of, if that's the frequency you're talking about. It's be smart, be sensible, and be logical. And also, again, playing into, fairly unique creative capabilities, never show the same thing to somebody twice. Always feed them another thing that might be interesting or might arouse their suspicion or their interest. And just be noble about it. And every now and then, put yourself in the seat of being someone who's at home and say to yourself, would this piss me off?
Do you have any tricks up your sleeve to make ads specifically surprise and delight rather than yawn and forget?
Yes. I was about to make a tattoo joke about sleeves, but I won't. Instead, I will answer the question. And this is more probably where I do have a bit of a mantra. And that is, the best ad sells nothing. The best ad sells an emotional connection and a desire. And I would say that sits at the forefront of anything that we do when we are engaged by a client from the moment we have that creative kickoff call, whether it's our Slingshot product where their ad will be included, or the Origin Ad Studio where we are building the story from the ground up in its entirety. Don't be frightened not to be selling. Be proud to tell a story and to be honest, humble, and and transparent, and say something that you think that not just because your stakeholders in Wall Street are telling you should be saying, but that you know matters and that means something to the person that's going to be seeing it.
All this content out there to differentiate is obviously the sword and shield of the battle for eyeballs. You make your content the belle of the ball in a room full of wallflowers.
Well, I mean, this is the biggest question that we know some of the answers to, and we're very good at it because obviously our content is the ad. And when most people think of content, they think of a movie or a show. But actually, what we've learned is very smart. And through a number of studies, including, IPG Media Labs and attaching electrodes to people, is that it's still content. And what you want to do is entertain. What you want to do is draw in and create the most important thing, which is a value exchange. Right. Again, we have to face the reality. We are trying to advertise and sell to the ADD generation, of which I am one, very proudly, by the way. It's why I'm on the creative side, and footnote for anyone out there who may have my affliction or gift of ADD, my photography is what quietens my brain down. That's why I do it. It takes me away from the world. But the answer to your Oh, God, no. See, there you go. The answer to your question, I think I was about to answer, but then I sidetracked myself rather ironically.
No, I think it's interesting that you're bringing up that ads should have, the ads themselves for content. Do you see a future in which a person isn't just spending 15 seconds on an ad, but they're really deep diving into ads, spending 30 minutes exploring a virtual store? And
yes, absolutely. And that is an instance where, like, your ad is just the hook. It's the opening salvo. It is the introduction that they can relate to. And that is, you know, where I mentioned earlier, then you just want to let the product do the talking after that. Now, it really does depend on the vertical, right? And the category that you're talking about. Someone who may be in the market for a personal loan probably will do that kind of deep diving, but also their situation may be slightly more pressing than someone who is toying around looking at potentially getting a bigger car. You know, you want to understand the nature of what it is, whether they're planning, like, travel is such a big vertical for us. You know, people who are thinking about their summer breaks may be thinking about them now, but that doesn't mean that they're going to go booking anything. But they may very well go down a rabbit hole as they discover more about a state that has more aces up its sleeve than maybe they thought before. And that, I think, is very much part of the true success. And being able to attribute that rabbit hole to something that you've put on TV is very, very important. And that's, you know, I know we don't want to make this, and you haven't asked to make this all about measurement attribution and all that kind of stuff, but it's actually vital that we have a constant feedback loop in order to see if that's happening, which is why we partner with people like Claritas to help with that, NCS, LoopMe, and very, very importantly, TVision, who are such fantastic partners of ours that really help us understand the attention that something's getting and help us infer with additional data such as Claritas information what it is that we're causing.
Do you have a real-time feedback loop?
It's as real-time as we ever need it to be. It always takes time to ingest and understand, classify, and normalize a lot of that information, especially if we want to make sure that we're looking at meaningful signals. It's very easy to get overexcited early into a brand study and look at what's being said, but you need to look at probability and statistical likelihood that this is the trend rather than, you know, a few people that you happen to have caught at a certain moment. But it's real time enough for us to be able to make the changes that we do to a client's creatives during a campaign.
Switching gears and moving on to something important, food. What is the dish that can turn any ordinary day into a feast fit for a king in your book?
Very easy. And everyone will probably expect the Englishman to say a roast, but I'm not. I'm going to tell you a damn good curry will do that. And
yellow, red, green? you care?
Oh, Indian. So okay. Typically more on the sort of brown to deep brown end, but a very good curry will always win me over. So therefore,
are there any good curry shops in York, or you miss London?
So funnily enough, just last Sunday, we went to one that was actually probably the best that I've been to in this city. Yes, they exist, and it's very authentic. But if I want a curry that I know will be the kind of thing I'm looking for, I'll probably take 5 or 6 hours and make it myself. I've been working on the same recipe for about 11 years.
What's your ultimate thirst quencher? What keeps you fueled up for all these brainstorming sessions? Is that coffee? Was that coffee?
No, it's not. It's green tea. So by day, green tea. And by night, gin and tonic, I would say. I probably split my day evenly. I mean, they don't know I said that, but fairly evenly. But no, green tea to me is magic juice.
So I notice you're probably not from Texas. What can you tell me where you hail from? And how did your journey lead you to the forefront of the CTV revolution?
I'll keep this quick. I'm actually from Kansas. And what got me emigrating from Kansas, England to the US was about 11 or 12 years ago. I was running a business in the UK, an e-commerce business, and then got invited to get involved at a founder level. Well, I had an idea in a kitchen with somebody who became my partner to build a certain type of search engine, and that got us to California. And about a year and a half after we started building that, a big piece that came out of that search engine was a huge amount of data. And of course, 2012 to 2014, it was the year of data, big data. We were slap bang in the middle of it and learned how to normalize and actually sell geofenced, date stamped, time stamped event information to advertisers in order to be able to start creating better profiles of their audiences. And then from there to Tremor, as it was then in 2015, where I was on a four-man team to launch their SSP, to Newsy, to Origin.
I remember Tremor when they were in New York and they were in a like a flat. This had to be 15 years ago, 16 years ago when they were first started.
Yes, I joined when they were on 23rd Street in Flatiron and then up to Times Square to the Paramount Building, which wasn't very popular for the people. Those of us had to go there every day. But yes, I mean, that company's been through so much change. And to think that there's just a tiny fragment of my DNA somewhere in now what is the Magma SSP, sometimes I do stop and think about over either green tea or gin and tonic.
What was your biggest culture shock in coming to the U.S. besides, you know, no healthcare?
Like weight gain.
Really? Like for me, all the junk? You just more junk here?
The culture shock was seeing how fat I could become, which was monumentous and addict.
Like Starbucks on every corner, you know?
Yes, I didn't exactly know what it was. I always thought I was being healthy, but I did have to learn how to run again and how to level set on what the right amount of food was. But that was probably the negative one. But the positive, like, there are good culture shocks as well as bad. And honestly, there was one good culture shock, which really sums up why I never belonged back home in the UK. And that is, like, why not? Why not do it? Back home, it's like, well, why do it? Everything's okay. Here, the thirst and the hunger towards progress, change, and different, the lack of fear around different is culturally probably the biggest difference, I'd say, between where I come from and where I live now.
The ultimate question of self-reflection, who has made the biggest splash in your life, shaping you into the powerhouse you are today?
Well,
besides your mom.
Besides mom. Yeah, and mom would naturally, I mean, thank you for that, but I don't think she would have been top spot. I sometimes think about this, and the answer is it was a teacher I had when I was about 13 who sat me down. This is a very common story for a lot of people. He sat down and told me I'd never achieve anything in my life. And I remember it not frightening me or making me sad. I just remembering it. And I think it sat somewhere inside everything I've done ever since.
Why do you think a teacher would feel the need to say that?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Maybe he's not happy as a teacher. And he's
paid well.
Yeah, well, maybe he's jealous of someone that has a fresh opportunity ahead. I don't know, but it worked.
Inquiring minds would like to know, what's the one thing that keeps you bounding out of bed in the morning, ready to take on the world?
100% the one and same thing every day, and that is the responsibility I feel towards everybody that works with me and for me at Origin.
You're the fourth person now in a row who has said something like that.
I'm very pleased to hear it.
Every founder from Dave Morgan to, we had Drew Stein of Audigent on yesterday, they all said the same thing. Oh, and then we had Jared Segal. They all said the enormous responsibility they have in being an owner. That if their company doesn't work out, all these people aren't going to have jobs.
And they didn't realize
that until that point happened.
It's the last thing I think about when I go to bed. And it's the first thing I think about when I wake up in the morning. You know, these are people whose rent or mortgages or kids' tuition or food, you know, or fuel is in a indirect way, you know, my responsibility. And it's not always fun to have to think about, but it's very fueling.
When I see people like Elon Musk, for example, so flippant about their own employees coming and going, it just drives me up the wall, because they do have a responsibility to their employees and vice versa. The employees have a responsibility to the company. And if you can't trust each other, how can you build a company?
Humans aren't commodities. And, you know, they are people. We are people. And when you're electing to do something in the daylight hours, you know, then that should be respected, and it should be treated with the seriousness that it deserves.
Great. So lastly, if you could send a text message to yourself in the past when you started, what would you tell yourself? And most importantly, would you listen?
When I started Origin?
When you started in the industry?
No, I'd say don't be naive. The industry is a lot more broken and corrupt than I think we really want to admit.
Money in it. There's always going to be a percentage of people who are going to take advantage of it.
Yes, and it's a bit of a sort of boys' club, and I think that's pretty sad. But I think I would have said, don't be naive. Keep your blinkers open and take everything that you see and think about it first.
And the music means that's our show. Special thanks to Fred Godfrey for sitting down for such a great interview. And as always, thank you to Troutman & Men for paying the bills. Take care and have a great week.